Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary. Welcome back to the show, Joseph.
Great to be with you again, Jim.
What kind of bow tie goes with your cowboy hat so you can go out to all those stampede parties?
Well, you have these kind of cowboy ties that you put around your the top of your thing. It's not the bow ties that we normally wear, but I'll be going back to them, once we get past this season and go back to meetings downtown. So,
Bolo ties, right, for the cowboys?
Bolo ties, yeah.
So how would you describe the state of the energy markets right now?
Well, there's two markets, the oil market and the gas market, and it's almost like a 180-degree difference in the viewpoint. On the oil side, $83, multiply that by 1.36 for the Canadian dollar exchange rate, and the oil companies are pretty happy with what's going on. The prices are very, very good. Cash flows for Q2. We'll start hearing about them by the end of July, early August, and then quite a lot through August, as everybody reports. And the numbers should be good on the liquid side. Condensate did well as well. But when you go to natural gas, if you're not hedged sufficiently or hedged at good prices, with the price of natural gas under a buck, you may see some companies that have spent very little during the quarter will see their productions declining because the economics are just not there to drill wells and bring on new production. You'll probably see for the liquids focus, Montney, Duvernay players, where they're bringing on more liquids, that they're going to probably show increasing gas volumes. But if you're more of a dry gas player, i.e. under 30% liquids, then likelihood you're probably going to see your production volumes decline for Q2 of 2024, and cash flows also being lower than Q2 of 2023.
How's the Trans Mountain pipeline working out?
Well, you're seeing reports that there was some issues with vapor, and they might change how much goes through and what kind of product goes through and what kind of heavy goes through. But the shipping out of BC can't take these very large crude carriers. So a lot of the crude is going down to California, not to Asia directly. Some of it stays in California and goes into the refineries there because they're built for taking heavier crude. And California heavy crude volumes are down because of the government regulations and the aging of the fields. But you have then where the ships go offshore and transfer it to very large crude carriers. And, two or three ships coming out of BC probably fill one of those big guys. And then they go off to the Asian markets, Japan, Korea, India, China, wherever the buyers are from. And so it's a little bit more costly because of the, transportation challenges. We're selling more crude. Volumes will go up. Trans Mountain is going to be very beneficial for the rights of way through First Nations, and also for tax paying for the province and tax paying for the municipality. So, a lot of people are going to start talking more positively about it, even though they were, in opposition, before, and that's why the cost overrun is there. The question now is, if the government wants to sell it, First Nations buy it, they're going to have to take a massive write-down of the overrun, just like, you know, TransCanada, TC Energy had to do with the Coastal Gas Line, which went way over budget. And then once they get to an economic number for, you know, the pipeline, the TMX pipeline, then they could potentially, you know, find ways for the First Nations to be owners with the private sector, and the private sector guys, you know, be it Pembina or whoever, would help with the operation side.
What's going on in the LNG front?
Well, LNG volumes were down in the States because of Hurricane Beryl, and that they're now starting to come back up with the very hot weather that, you know, that we're having here. It's the same thing is happening in Asia, be it China or India or, you know, Japan, also in Europe. So LNG demand is picking up around the world, and some facilities are having problems producing for whatever reason, aging of the fields or maintenance issues. There was a report that I saw this morning that refineries in Europe are having a problem, you know, producing product for the local markets because of the heat issues that impact the equipment. And so they may produce 1 million barrels or 10% less than they normally would, which of course, you know, if the economy was growing would be problematic. But with a sluggish economy, you know, it'll just run down inventories.
How is the Alberta oil patch doing?
Well, there's massive number of stampede parties. I have been invited to more this year than years that I can remember, you know, outside of, let's say, you know, 07 or 08 when we had those heady prices. You know, you drive down 17th, which is where all the, you know, where everything happens in terms of the parties. They're full. All of the clubs are having, you know, have their patios and they're full. You know, restaurants are full. You know, we were trying to get a reservation for my wife's birthday and can't get one. They're all full up. And, we were going to go with a larger group. You know, if you wanted a table for two, you were okay. If you want a table for seven, you're not. So, it just shows you that, the oil side is so important to the province and to the industry, and it carries the day. You know, if we had both engines working, i.e. natural gas and liquids, this place would be going crazy. Real estate is still very strong. Massive amounts of construction going on. The city approved more density in the inner city, and you're seeing, you know, where one house was on a decent sized lot, there's now four homes with no lot, you know, no grass. So the city is working because the population has grown. When I moved to Alberta in 74, Edmonton had 300,000 people, Calgary 200,000. I think we're pushing 1.6 million in the greater Calgary area. It's quite something. And Edmonton's also growing, but not to the pace that Calgary is.
We'll have more with Joseph Schachter right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Joseph Schachter. Joseph, what's happening with OPEC Plus?
Well, OPEC keeps on talking that they've cut production, and, you know, they talked about maybe in Q4 they would increase production. And they talked about their 2.2 million barrels a day of cuts, and 1.2 of it was for all of OPEC, and 1 million was supposedly fully Saudi Arabia. But if you go to the data, and this week we got the OPEC report for the month of June, and OPEC produced 26.57 million barrels. And if you go back to June of 2023, we're looking at a change of only 261,000 barrels, not the 2.2 million. So when everybody says that there's tight supplies, there's not. You know, the only one that's really cut back was Saudi Arabia. They're producing 8.93, and they were producing in June. I'm just going to pull out that number. They were producing 9.99. So they've cut back. But Iran and others have come back and increased production. Iran now is producing 4.2 million. And, you know, when we're going back to June of 2023, Iran was producing only 2.75. So compare that to the, 3.25 now. You can see that, and there's others that have increased production. So that's really the issue, is that while Saudi Arabia has effectively honored what they were going to do, the rest of OPEC, because of their large populations and desperation for cash flow to, service their economies and, keep their governments functioning, it really is, something where there's not a problem with inventory. And with demand being sluggish, there's two theses out there. Demand will grow by 1 million barrels a day in 2024, and then there's the optimist calling for 2.5 to 3 million. Given the sluggishness of the U.S. consumer, given the weakness in China, given really no growth in Europe, I think the million is probably correct, because what it implies is, India growing by 200,000 or 300,000 barrels a day, and the emerging countries in, South America and Africa, they would be the rest of the increase. The U.S. number is just for, and this is just showing you the data from the EIA that came out on Wednesday. The U.S. consumed is consuming 20.7 million, and it's only up 0.7 from a year ago, but finished motor gasoline was 9.4 million, and that's down 1.2% from a year ago. So the consumer has cut back. The big thing for the total number is that we're seeing big increases in propane, residual fuel, and other product areas, other oils. Those are the ones that are growing. In other words, the byproducts, where oil is the input, not the jet fuel, not the gasoline that we traditionally think as the drivers of total demand. Remember, the U.S. consuming, as we mentioned, of 9.4 million barrels, that's 8-9% of total world demand is just in the U.S. gasoline market. And then, you add in jet fuel, which is, 1.8 million, and you're talking that, 11 million. So you're talking, 11, 12% of total world demand just comes from the U.S. in gasoline and jet fuel consumption, and they're not growing.
What does that tell you about the state of the economy?
Well, there's, if you're in a state where there is a big government, i.e., the Washington, Maryland, areas, where Washington, D.C. is, they're probably, doing quite well. Anywhere there, where there's big defense industry making artillery shells to give to Ukraine, and other war fronts, the Taiwan situation, et cetera, or drone manufacturing, wherever there's military industrial complexes, they're doing well. But the basic consumer, which is 70% of the U.S. economy, is not doing well. We've seen Walgreens announce they're going to close a quarter of their pharmacies in the United States, part of it because they're unprofitable, part of it because of the theft issue. We've seen Nike have disappointing numbers, Levi Strauss report disappointing numbers, Helen of Troy, a cosmetics company, women, their sales were, I think, down 12%, and they had profitability down 70%. So you're seeing the consumer really retrench and buying the basics. So you've seen Costco, announce some good numbers, and Walmart is doing, is doing okay. So people are doing what they need to go through day-to-day life, but the luxuries and the discretionary purchases are not happening at this time.
And Costco just announced that they're boosting their membership fees for the first time since 2017.
Yeah, I think it's $5 for the basic, $10 for the executive. And again, that's a lot of their profitability is their membership fees. They lose so much money on their chickens and hot dogs, that they need to make it up elsewhere. But, when you go to Costco, which we do, every once in a while, you line up for 15 minutes to get cheaper gas. You go into the store, but they don't have everything the same from month, except for the chickens and the hot dogs and other things, in the food and vegetable area. But a lot of times things that you think are, were there one time are not there the next because of the deals. So they get the deal, from the manufacturer producer? But, Costco's you know, it's a bit of a drive, but, you know, if you have a big family event and you need to buy in bulk, you know, they're still humming along beautifully.
How big of an impact on prices is the shipping business avoiding the Strait of Hormuz because of the Houthi missile attacks on ships, having to go around Cape Horn?
Yeah, there's the Red Sea is now really blocked because the Houthis are still firing, and a lot of the U.S. Navy is now, you know, a lot of it's in the Eastern Mediterranean to kind of keep Lebanon under control, and Iran not upping the ante there against Northern Israel through Hezbollah, you know, the power that they have in Lebanon. But the transportation challenges are meaning higher costs. They're also saying it increases demand for crude oil because of bunker fuel for shipping. And then the other issue is that China's not importing as much. So shipping that would normally go to China is not finding markets. And so some of the shipping is the prices, for the bigger things are not being used. But for other shipping is gone up because of the cost of fuel going up and the longer transportation distances to get to the final markets.
Joseph, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Yeah, in terms of the stocks, you know, Q2 results will be coming out. I'm thinking that, you know, for the oil names, as I mentioned earlier, they're going to report some decent numbers. Natural gas names will not. I think we might see a 10-15% correction in the energy sector. Today, for example, we saw them take a scythe to the AI semiconductor stocks. I think they're down 5% for the big guy getting beat up here. And Taiwan Semiconductor, AMD, they all felt a bit of a pressure today. And I think that the peak potentially in the parabolic move that we saw in the AI related names maybe we're over the rollover, and if that's the case, we may see a 15-20% general stock market correction if the Canadian oil industry during that negative environment goes down 10% or so. Then we could get a fabulous new buying opportunity. We had a great one in February of this year. We may get another one maybe in the fall, and people should have cash and be waiting to buy their favorite names. And we think that it's going to be a very attractive time. We just this week added three new names to our coverage list, one of them being a royalty trust with a very good yield, and two of them are growth stories in the liquid side. So we're looking always at new names, and we have our levels of buy, which in some of them are buys right now, but a lot of them we're saying on a 10-15% correction they'll be in buy territory. But if you look out a year from now, if we're right that we're $90, $95, this time, July of 2025, I think we're going to see probably a 30-50% move in many of the stocks from the bottom that comes in the next month, a couple months. And so investors should be having a serious look about owning the commodity board, not only, energy, but, precious metal stocks are lagging the price of the movement that we've seen in the gold and silver. Mining stocks have not really done much, uranium prices versus uranium stocks. So I think we're in a commodity cycle. We had one from 1974 to 81, the price of oil went from under $3 to 36. And, people may remember the name Dome Petroleum and HBOG and others. 1999 to 08, we had another fabulous cycle from $10 oil to, the 147. This time we went from, on the futures contract, 650, but the online contract was negative. And I think before this cycle is over, we're going to see all-time highs above that 147 that we saw in summer of 2008. And that means stocks will go from, right now many are trading below PDP, proved developed producing, which is what the banks will lend against. And historically, then you have non-producing proven reserves, which is 1P, and then proven plus probable, which is 2P. And historically, at the top of cycles, stocks trade at, or sometimes if they're the trophy names, above their 2P NAV. So we think there's a potential here for, you know, five baggers in the cycle between now and the end of the decade. So you want to look for those buying opportunities. This is a cycle that I think has a long way to go for most of the commodity board. So I think investors who are underweighted the commodity sector, and energy is the biggest portion, definitely should be taking a serious look and doing their research, picking their names. If they're dividend investors and they need that plus capital gain, a lot of names out there. If you're looking for growth stories with significant capital gain, even though government is going to take a little more of it in Canada with that two-thirds move. But I think there's a lot of upside, and that's what we do for our clients. We provide research on 39 companies, all the way from the conservative pipeline infrastructure to small cap explorers. And we think it's going to be a very attractive cycle. It's been pretty good since March of 2020. We're now in a pause phase, but when that pause phase is over, I think we're going to see $90 on a consistent basis next year with spikes over 100. That's going to make for a lot of upside in the share price.
Joseph, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure as always, Jim.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from Calgary. If you have any questions for Joseph or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. You can find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.